Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
There's a story that is just, I think, really powerful. Where is it coming from?
Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Okay. We used to be on the air there in Fort Smith. I don't think we are these days, though.
Well, it says here, according to, what is this, arkansasmatters.com. It's a local news station, KRK4.
Okay.
And it says, in October of 2016, Masjid al-Salam, Masjid means
a mosque,
you know, it's the proper term. It means a place of making prostration, the place where you bow to God. And al-Salam means of peace.
And so, for listeners that don't know, you opened a masjid here in Keene, New Hampshire just this month.
Yeah, yeah. Masjid al-Latif.
Last month.
Which means the gentle or the one who doesn't need force. So anyway, it says Masjid al-Salam in Fort Smith was vandalized, but one year later, the man behind the act, Abraham Davis, receives his ticket to freedom from the people that he hurt the most. Quote, it shouldn't be hanging over him for the rest of his life, President al-Salam of al-Salam, Louay Nasri said. October of 2016, swastikas etched in spray paint and the words go home covered the front of Masjid al-Salam. Not only was he caught, he was caught and convicted. And after the conviction, he got the community service. He got a great big fine. And
Did that go back to the mosque, the fine?
The mosque, no. But the mosque, they found out that fine was going to place Davis in a huge financial strain.
As it does on most people who go through the court system. I mean, generally, the court victims are not people who drive, you know, fancy cars. They go after poor people, typically, and those are the people who are least in a position able to pay the fines that are assessed against them. In fact, some courts know this, like here in New Hampshire, they will actually assess you with a payment plan as well. So if the judge will say to you, Mr. Coley, can you pay this fine in full right now? And if you're like most people in court, you'll say,
nope.
And then he'll say, well, we can put you on a payment plan, but there's going to be a 20% fee on top of it.
Oh, you see, they don't do that in Tennessee. There's no fee for paying.
I don't know if it's 20%,
but
it's some
fee that you pay there is if you don't pay in cash.
Oh, okay.
And that is a huge fee.
They charge like a credit card service fee kind of thing?
Like 15%. Yeah, it's a pretty huge fee. But what happens here is, says, quote, we heard that he was having some financial problems.
Right.
If you don't pay your fine, according to the judge, that's an automatic 6 years in jail.
Whoa.
Well.
What state was this?
Well, we didn't want Arkansas. Him to go to jail. End quote.
Do you remember when you started talking about Bitcoin on Free Talk Live? What year that was?
Yeah, I think it was 2011. When we first heard about the Silk Road, I think that was what it was, but I can't remember exactly what the issue was.
Interesting.
But it was in the news for some
reason. Bitcoin back then. Yeah, I remember hearing about it on your show, and that's how I initially got into Bitcoin.
Right on.
But I had trouble remembering like exactly what year it was I got into it.
Yeah, I think it was 2011. So kudos to you. Did you get into it and hold on to it, or did you get into it and then sell off when it hit like $100?
Sure, I have sold almost nothing.
Good job.
I did so well in that. I was a broke college student at the time.
Wow.
I had very little extra money, but I could tell I was a math and computer science student, and I could tell when I heard about Bitcoin, the potential that it had. So I put all my extra money in it, which wasn't a lot. And over a period of a couple of years, I managed to put about $3,000 into Bitcoin.
Whoa.
And today that's worth about, I'm approaching $500,000 in crypto assets. I've since diversified into some different altcoins.
Oh my
I got
God.
Every single Bitcoin fork. So I got
did you pay off your college
Bitcoin
debt?
Back then.
We got a whale coming through.
Did you pay off your college debt with it?
I didn't pay off college debt because I didn't have any.
Yeah. Good job.
I was kind of smart about how I financed my college. There was a service that y'all used to advertise on Free Talk Live around that time, and this was pre-Coinbase, and this was a service that I used to buy all my Bitcoin, and it was something like, they were people who were selling Bitcoin. It was a company that was doing this. It's not around anymore, and their business thing was you would go to a Wells Fargo bank, and you would deposit cash, and then you'd wait a few days, and then they'd send you your Bitcoin. Do you remember what that was called?
Oh, God. Yeah, it was Charlie Shrim's thing, I think. I'm spacing on what the name was right now, but if you were to go back on, like, look up Charlie Shrem and then go back and see his kind of history, the name of that that business will come up. But it's totally I'm losing it right now. We went to their offices in Manhattan, and we actually broadcast from their offices at that point in time. And they're no longer in business. That's because they went after Charlie. The federal government put him in prison for a couple of years because he was doing business with somebody who was on the Silk Road and who had informed him that he was on the Silk Road. And so he knew that he was doing business with somebody who was a Silk Road dealer, and they found out about that somehow. I forget the details, but ultimately he had unencrypted emails in his Gmail account. So when the feds went in to read his emails, they were just able to go and read his emails.
Forgiveness is important, but an important point to remember is there can be no forgiveness without repentance, and there's a reason for that.
I disagree. Well, but go ahead, you know, please explain.
Well, I'll give an example of that. Say, for example, you have somebody that has done terrible things, okay? They've lied, or they're a hypocrite, or other things. I mean, you can go down the list. Now, the fact of the matter is, the repentance comes in. Now, if I were to forgive them just like that and say, you know, it's okay, and I'm going to give a good example of that, who am I? I'm telling them it's okay to lie, it's okay to slander, it's okay.
No, forgiving somebody does not say that it was okay.
Actually, it's kind of like saying crime pays. See, I can forgive them personally within myself, and I probably already have done that because I feel sorry, because you got to be merciful for those who lie. They need to grow up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's true. But see, here's the thing. I cannot verbally do that. And I'll give an example of that. This is why I come to the conclusion that I did with your co-host sitting next to you, because it's also more incredibly difficult when the person has no remorse whatsoever, when yours truly called him out on very serious allegations, including lying about his own faith to the people.
What are you talking about?
Before I got into radio, actually part of what led me into radio, and before I got into political activism, I lectured on Islam, Islamic history, Islamic jurisprudence, Islamic law at Valencia College in Orlando, Florida, and at the University of Central Florida for 2 years. So, you know, there's a reason why you get an educated response from me, as I used to lecture at universities on the subject.
I mean, we didn't know each other real well before you moved to New Hampshire. I mean, we'd kind of met each other on various different occasions at events here in New Hampshire that you'd come to visit previously. But if I'd had any inkling that you were a dishonest person, you know, you would have never gotten a chance to open up the Malik Center where you did.
The imam there, Nasri, says here, it says, we thought this was the right thing to do. We thought, you know, if someone does something bad and came and apologized, then forgive them. Mm-hmm. That should be the natural thing. We had no idea that this forgiveness would become an international story. Nasri says, al-salam means the peaceful. And he continues to uphold that meeting. If he would have known who he meaning Davis, would have known who we are, then he wouldn't have done this, Nasri said. And if we would have known his troubles with us, then we would have tried to help him. Communication and education are extremely important.
Right, and you, in a situation like this where obviously ignorance was the motive, I mean, surely the motivating factor. Had he known that these are a kind group of people that are human beings just like him, maybe he wouldn't have done this. So I think that that's true. But the fact is he did do it. And after the fact, if you aren't willing to talk to this person, or
I wonder how drunk he was when he did it.
Good question.
Because I've seen a lot of this. This isn't the first time something like this has happened. There was another vandalism, I think in Missouri, where the guy, no, it was in, yeah, I believe it was in Missouri, where the guy broke in and tore the mosque up.
Oh, jeez.
Macheted some walls, peed in the floor and stuff. And then then the same thing happened. They decided to forgive the guy and let the guy go.
The argument against forgiveness, which I'm not in favor of, I'm in favor of forgiveness, just playing devil's advocate here. Couldn't the argument be that, well, look, Will, if you forgive this guy, the news is getting out here. Now all of the Nazis, they know that they can just come and destroy your property with no punishment whatsoever, because you're just going to let it go. You're going to pay the fines for them.
Well, you know, I'm sure when Salah Hadin did this, you know, decided to send a doctor – to William the Conqueror, there were Muslims that probably said the same thing to him. You know,
and William the Conqueror was trying to kill the Muslims.
Yeah, he was. It was the last crusade. He fell off of his horse. The horse fell on top of him and injured him severely. And the response of Salah ad-Din was to send his top doctors to, wow. and a new horse. So that was, you know, that was what he did. So I'm sure there were probably Muslims at the time that were like, you know what, you're just inviting the crusaders to continue to come back.
Mm-hmm.
By showing, you know, magnanimity. Thank you. In this way,
what I've heard a little bit so far, hearing you both talk about forgiveness, is kind of expressing forgiveness on this sort of black or white scale of forgiveness or revenge.
Okay,
and I don't really think that that's how that spectrum works. I find myself living very frequently in the middle.
All right.
So forgiveness, a lot of people will talk about it. Forgiveness is not something that you give to someone else.
It's for you.
You give to yourself, yeah. right? Which
to reduce whatever burden you have
sure.
Upon yourself over the frustrations over the incident.
Sure. So I've kind of like thought about that a lot over the course of my life because I've had some people who I could forgive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any like sort of wish to seek revenge on the people who have sort of done me wrong throughout my life, but in terms of giving them complete absolution, you know, absolution, which I think is another sort of interesting thing to talk about in terms of forgiveness, I have no interest in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I've in no interest in, you know, it, because if the forgiveness is for myself, well, I would have to be interested in it, and I have no interest in actually like forgiving these people. I have no interest in revenge on them either. I'm just like going to go for indifference. Like, okay, you don't exist to me anymore. Like if you're not going to make any, like, but these are people who haven't made any sort of effort to seek forgiveness.
Right. I don't think that you're necessarily wrong for doing it your way, Johnson. I mean, people should do or not do whatever level of forgiving they
right.
feel is right for them.
Right.
Because it is all about the, for the most part, about the person who's doing the forgiving.
Right.
And less about the person who's being forgiven. Mm. Although, as I was saying before, it can be, I think, a very powerful experience for that person to be forgiven by their victim, even if they didn't ask for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you feel like you need to be asked before you forgive, that's not, you know, an illegitimate position,
sure.
as long as you're the one who's willing to live with whatever burden
sure.
that creates in you. And if you're saying there's no burden there, if you're saying that, you know, just ignoring
yeah.
a situation is sufficient for you, then
yep. I mean, and I've
God
got there are a lot of people who I can name who I think can think of where, you know, I know nothing's going to happen, but it's sort of like these people where it's like, I feel better about myself not forgiving those people, not saying, mm-hmm. oh, you have an opportunity to just ignore this thing. You've done these bad things. You've done wrong to other people and you're being forgiven. I feel better about myself not completely letting it go, not seeking revenge,
yeah.
but not letting it go and being the type of person who says, I expect better of you. If I'm going to have completely forgiven someone, I'm willing to put that person back in a category of trust again. That's what, to me, forgiveness means.
To me, it doesn't mean that at all. What do you think, Will, about trust versus forgiveness?
Yeah, I don't think forgiving someone means that you trust them. I think it just means that you're like, okay, you owe me for a violation of my rights, and I am going to forgo that right. I have a right to something because of what you've done to me. You've violated my rights in some way. You've
right.
stole from me. You've committed fraud. You mm-hmm. have, in some way, you've harmed my person or my property. And I have a right to restitution for that up to a certain point. And I'm willing to forgo that. But that doesn't mean that I trust you.
Right.
You know, if you stole from me, I'm still going to watch you a little closer when you come to my
Damn
store.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Just right. because I didn't have you thrown in jail for stealing from me doesn't mean I'm not going to watch you or that I want you back in my store at all.
The issue is that with every one of these people that I can think of, for the most part, has been an employer of in some fashion who has
The employer
failed,
owes you.
Yeah, the employer owes me, has failed to, you know, pay
mm-hmm.
for, you know, services rendered, you know, contractually in every
yep.
in every single situation. And one of them is in federal prison for mismanagement of money, to think, you know, so, and it has made, you know, national news. I think we talked about
going to take him a while to make
her. Yeah, she, you know, well, she's never going to make the payment anyway. Right. She's, you know, was trying to silence SEC agents using voodoo spells. So she's, all you right. know, not paying a lot
can't
of people
fault her
back.
For that.
No, I can fault her for being a lunatic,
yeah.
but not for attempting
trying
to
silence
avoid the
government.
SEC.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, she was trying to silence the SEC while robbing older people of their money.
Geez.
So, you know, like falsely investing and lying to people and,
wow.
and all that stuff. But
you've had,
you know,
some crappy bosses. Jeez.
Some. I mean, some, you know, I can't say that they're all necessarily grabby. That one particular person is a terrible person.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
According to some, you know, modern psychologists, I guess there's something very strange happening to modern friendships.
So
it says here, modern societies are often highly mobile, with people moving around for work, school, or just to start afresh. And this is particularly, I think, true amongst the Free State Project and people who are moving for liberty.
To New Hampshire,
yeah,
the New Hampshire Freedom Migration, which is the larger concept. The Free State mm-hmm. Project is one of the groups
right.
of libertarian types moving to one place so we can concentrate our efforts in this one place. That's the reason why the three of us are here tonight, because mm-hmm. otherwise we probably never would have met Will. Johnson, you and I right. happen to know each other in Sarasota, Florida, where
right.
we both happened to originally be from. But the reason why we're here is because of that migration.
We also both happened to vote for New Hampshire.
That's true. That's true.
The state to be
so it's
selected.
Y'all's fault.
Yeah, we
I
are. Definitely.
It was
you.
A clear winner.
Yeah, it was
of the of the 10 candidate states that the Free State Project had chosen, which mm-hmm. the Free State Project was the first sort of start to this migration.
Original impetus.
So every morning when I wake up and it's 15 degrees zero, I'm gonna.
There was no warm state on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I also ranked Wyoming.
It could have been Wyoming or like Wisconsin.
Alaska.
And it would have been, like,
oh,
or Alaska.
God, yeah, it would not have been
Wisconsin
any
wasn't on
anywhere else.
Alaska yeah. was on my one exception.
At the same time, you're not a pack rat. You don't have a messy
right.
place. You don't have...
I used to be, though, but
really?
I had to balance it out. There was a time when I was living in Florida that I lived with also some people who were worse pack rats than mm-hmm. me, and it was... I mean, I think
is
you,
that what changed
I think
it for you?
Remember, you? Yes.
Okay. Because pack rats are kind of like, I don't know, it's considered to be a mental illness that
yeah.
can be passed down like from family
hoarders,
members.
Buried alive.
It's a crazy show. If anybody's ever seen Hoarders, you make me want to watch an episode because
yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time. But Will, you're shaking your head.
I'm good on Hoarders.
You've seen it? You've
I've
seen that?
It too, yeah. yeah. And just the way ugh, those people
it's crazy.
Live.
Oh, it's
just,
horrific.
So crazy.
And I've been with people who are borderline, like probably getting into hoarder territory
yeah.
and I've been in that environment.
It's horrible.
And it's horrible. You know,
dirty.
Or if you move into a house where hoarders have taken up residence, you know what it's like to suddenly move in where hoarders are moving out of.
We live next door to people that had like a pathway that went through their house. And when
yep.
they moved out, our house was invaded by vermin and
oh,
cockroaches.
God.
Like we never had a problem with
oh,
bugs
God.
The whole time we lived there. In this big duplex we were living in. And as soon as the hoarders moved out, boom.
The research found that the more people have moved around the country, the more they tend to have a disposable view of both objects and close social ties.
Okay.
That
I
isn't,
can see that.
That isn't a new idea of the United States as a mobile country. For many people here, moving up means moving around. If you're willing to move for school or a job, you have a higher chance of being successful. But we're saying it also makes things superficial and disposable.
Mm.
It might be fine to have a disposable diapers, but not disposable friendships. If you know you're moving and develop the idea that everything can be replaced, you won't develop the same strong and deep ties. We're suggesting that this is a broad phenomenon where we all tend to look at relationships at, to coworkers, friends, and social network members as replaceable. Even in romantic relationships, where I ask my students what they would do when things get difficult, most of them say they would move on rather than try to work things out, or, God forbid, turn to a counselor. These kinds of attitudes can be psychologically unhealthy, Gilath thinks.
Well, hold on. I mean, they can be, but in certain circumstances, moving on is the right thing to do. If it turns out that the person...
You need to depart a family of origin. Oh, wait. I mean, sorry.
That the person who with whom you've decided to have a relationship turns out to be a different person than you initially had thought they were, or they've had a significant change in how they behave or something like that. You think attachments are psychologically
healthy?
Yeah,
I do. I really do. I mean, obviously there's a level of attachment where it becomes unhealthy, when you're ordering buried alive.
That's a big problem.
Definitely a problem. And, there are even, there's huge shades of gray along that spectrum as well, where it still can be problematic.
I think you're better off.
Women that are attracted, they're trapped in abusive relationships, or men that are trapped in abusive relationships. Sure. I think
you're better off with less attachment than with more. I think you're better off with less stuff than with more.
I don't agree.
Because if you look at the extremes, all right, so let's look at the stuff question for a moment. You look at the extreme of hoarding, which we've already talked about, which is, no one would disagree. It's crazy.
Right.
It's dangerous. It's unhealthy.
Right.
It's crazy. It's like an actual biohazard in a lot of circumstances. And it's a fire hazard. There's all kinds of things that are bad about that. But then if you go towards some on the other side, somebody like Peace Pilgrim, for instance, I read a book about her book, actually, that is excellent for anybody that's interested in simplicity and Quakers and all that. She walked around the country in the United States decades ago. And that was just what she did for basically more than a decade of her life was to just walk around and go across, kind of like how Forrest Gump ran across the country. She would walk and
500 miles and then walk 500 more.
I don't know how many miles at a time. If you are somebody who stays in one place, you put down roots in a place, you're going to develop relationships. You have to, unless you're a complete antisocial, grump who doesn't want to talk to people and you stay in your house all the time. You're going to develop relationships with the people in that area. Mm-hmm. You have to, but you can still not have a bunch of stuff. So it's not one. It's not you have to be detached from both, or it can be one or the other. I think if you're in.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm actually kind of interested to see if there's more on this. If this person has studied more on the topic to see whether or not that's true, because the way it's phrased here in the article is it's two separate statements that we found a correlation between the way you look at objects and perceive your relationships. And then they went on to say, if you move around a lot, you develop attitudes, disposability. So it's two separate.
So they found a correlation.
Yeah.
Okay.
They found a correlation, but I don't know if it's limited to people that move around a lot.
That's a good question then. Well, I can say this. I mean, I feel as though I can develop relationships but not have a bunch of stuff. I don't think they're one in the same necessarily. Or maybe they're just saying that there's a tendency for
but
that,
I think
but
that
there are exceptions.
You have to think that people that there might be people who have a willingness to move, because they did bring that up in the article as there are people who, are willing to sacrifice relationships for
career.
Making a move for a career or something like that. And maybe that person hasn't moved before.
You brought up the woman that walked across America, whatever, and
Peace Pilgrim. And yeah,
Peace Pilgrim. Yeah, well, that's a great idea, but suppose everybody decided to be a peace pilgrim.
Right. Yeah, it wouldn't work if everybody decided. Well, and it's not to say that Peace Pilgrim was saying, "Hey, everybody, you should do like I do." She wasn't. That was just something that. And I forget in the very beginning, she talks about her story and how she ended up doing that. And for her, at that time in her life, that was her calling. It wasn't something that she was advocating that people emulate. If there was something she was advocating that people emulate, it was to emulate peace. That was the message that she was out there trying to spread. And she also chose a message of simplicity as well, which I think is a valuable message, in a world of hoarders.
The hoarders are on the other end of the spectrum. I probably lean towards more of a collector than not.
I would say most people do.
And And what I see, you know, amongst the stuff that I have, and even a lot of things that people would consider refuse, is I see value in everything.
If you do find yourself with stuff that you don't want anymore, whether it's yours or a you know, dead family member or friend or something like that, there are ways to turn the crowd loose on them. So, for instance, you could post, let's say you had a house full of things, somebody has passed away, and you just don't want to spend the time that it would take to go through it all. You can actually, like, you know, post on Craigslist, free stuff, kitchen, you know, living room, furniture, whatever. Come on in, take it away. If you can haul it, it's yours. And then, you know, the freebie searchers and the pack rats will come out, and they'll literally take away a bunch of the stuff for you.
Yeah, I live in a condo complex, and they actually have every spring and a May, you know, a huge yard sale. And and if I can, I'd get stuff out. And, you know, of course,
yeah,
always other challenges that interfere with getting stuff like that done.
I wonder how many shows there are out there producing cryptocurrency-related content daily. Like, you definitely have a bunch of cryptocurrency podcasts out there, but I think most of them are probably no more than once or twice a week. Are there any shows that, I mean, I'm not saying I know the whole bevy of crypto shows. There are, I know the ones that are more libertarian. I'm sure there are cryptocurrency shows that are not that libertarian that are out there. I just am curious. Does anybody know off the top of their head, is there a show that's doing cryptocurrency related? I mean, Free Talk Live mentions cryptocurrency every night, but we don't always get in deep on it every single night. Does anybody know of any? Because yours might be one of the only, if not the only, every single day we're doing cryptocurrency talk. Kind of.
We'll be bringing some of the biggest names in the community on as well. You know, I mean, we're going to be bringing in whales. We're going to people who have made millions of dollars trading. Mm-hmm. We're going to be bringing in people.
Most of those guys don't want to be known.
Yeah, but they will go on. I've got some that are willing to go on air as long as they can go by like pseudonyms. They don't have to give, because you know this is a liberty based, you know, broadcast. So like, if you don't want to tell me who you are, bro, I don't care who you are, you know. But please come and tell my listeners who may not be particularly well versed in trading. You know, like, how do you do this kind of work? How do you make money trading cryptocurrencies? And we want to encourage people to get wallets.
You've got an exciting project that I'm interested in, and that project is to make a operating system for phones that is private and open source. Am I right on all this?
Oh, yes. That's ILO, Project ILO, that I started 2 months ago. And, you know, it's an operating system for smartphones, but not only. I want to provide both an operating system and, you know, associated web services like search, email, and online office. And I want all those things to be more respectful with users' privacy, data privacy, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, with the Edward Snowden leaks that came out a couple of years ago, if everybody doesn't know at this point, you know, governments around the world, including the United States government specifically, have access to your metadata.